Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and it is December the 18th, and we're doing our call today on mental meltdowns and how athletes have difficulty with, just a total breaking down before an event or during an event, and how they recover after an event. So just excited to talk about this topic, since it's something where we can, as performing edge coaches and sports psychology coaches, you can have so much of a great influence. So let's talk about, exercises for dealing with mental meltdowns and how to visualize success during a crisis, and how to manage emotions under pressure, because emotions can really go crazy, and tools for recovering quickly, and then how to turn mental mistakes into mental breakthroughs, because oftentimes when someone's having a mental meltdown, it can lead the path for deep learning and understanding about themselves, and most of the time it can really turn into a breakthrough, a huge step forward for them, and then strategies to deal with tough athlete situations. And, of course, all these calls are the main purposes for you to ask your questions and to share your own situations if you have, tough athlete situations, or if you have any questions about marketing or business or coaching, that's great. So, yeah, Alex, you had a question. You and Amy were talking. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I think Amy was asking how I'm coming along with reaching out to teams, and in my experience, at least so far, I have not been able to get the ball rolling, at least to meet someone my expectations. I've been doing this for a bit of time, but it's not for lack of reaching out to people, coaches, players, parents, improving the website. I have been putting a lot of effort trying to get this moving along, and to my surprise, I'm getting much less contact or people contacting me about this work. So I don't know. Maybe I have to do something different, because I'm not getting the results I was expecting.
It's a great question. Amy, were you mentioning something too, or did you have comments?
Well, I remember Alex saying something last week that our last phone call, that he was going to start reaching out to different colleges, and that's what I've been doing too. And what I find with these coaches is that it really, really depends who you reach out to. I'm finding that a lot of these coaches, I don't know if it's just laziness or they're just too busy, but half of them don't even respond to your emails. And I just keep thinking, this is just so rude. How can they not even respond to them? And so I have one coach who I know will respond. He's fantastic. And I sent out a bunch of emails the other day, and same thing. He was the only one that responded to me quickly. I still haven't heard from the others. And I just think it's a really personal thing as far as what their personality is like. And I'm going to follow up with these other coaches that haven't emailed me back with a phone call and see if I can get them on the phone. Because sometimes they really don't respond, particularly if it's in the middle of their season. But I think this is a good time now because they finished up their season and they're not in the next season. So I think that helps a lot.
Yeah. I know, Amy, you've had good success, it seems like, with various teams, and you've been really active working with the Peninsula Ballet and then the Haverford College, right, or school.
Yeah, Haverford College. But now I have this new St. Joe's University, which is a big university.
Uh-huh.
And this coach he's an older man. He played at Wimbledon and Forest Hills, and he's from New Zealand. He's a really terrific man. And he's interested in this, and he's just very good about responding. So I sent him an email a couple days ago, just a very upbeat email, no pressure, saying, you know, some of these schools like to do a series of three workshops, a preseason, midseason, and playoff.
Uh-huh.
And so then he responded to me, and he said, well, why don't you give me your prices for that, and I'm going to put it in my budget. So now I'm thinking, well, he responded favorably to that. I'm going to reach out to these other coaches and kind of offer that as something, because it's not a huge commitment, but at least you have interaction with them. It's not a one-time deal.
Yeah, that is a great idea, Amy.
That's,
and if you can offer them something specific like that rather than just saying coaching, have a preseason, midseason, and playoffs, workshop for each of those, or a kind of a part one, part two, part three.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you were thinking?
Yep. That's. I don't know if you saw my email. I sent it out about an hour to you saying I'd love to be able to brainstorm a little bit and get people's feedback as far as if you were given the chance to do three workshops with a college team, you know, preseason, mid, playoff, what are some of the topics that you feel are really captivating and would help them?
Yeah, that is a great question. Yeah, somehow I didn't get your email here, so if you could send it again, that would be great. Because I always respond to emails right away. So
I wonder why.
Yeah, but that's a good topic and a good question that maybe it relates to you, Alex, too, what you could offer them specifically. So you
send this email to the coach directly?
Yeah, I sent it. What I do is I spend some time going online,
mm-hmm.
and I read about the teams, I read about the coaches, and they all have email addresses in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I send a personal email out to the coach saying, you know, that I've been doing different workshops, what my background is, and I offer a complimentary one that I would love to be able to. The other thing I do is I say, you know, I really benefit from getting your input. I would love to hear what the things that work well for you and maybe the issues that you'd like to work on, but it's really valuable information as a sports psychology coach to talk to a coach and find out, you know, what you think. You tell me about your team. And then I offer a complimentary workshop. And last year I was able to get in at Penn for two workshops with two different teams, and then at St. Joe's, and then at Haverford I did get paid for it. But then once they say, oh, you're in, then I start emailing the other team saying, oh, I'm doing a workshop at Penn, I'm doing a workshop, and then they become interested because, oh, well, what are you offering to them? If they're doing it, maybe we should do it. So once you get, like, the first one, then I kind of feed off of that one.
Right, you can say I'm doing a workshop for this team and for this coach, and then, yeah, like you said, use their name and that as credibility that you're already in the door kind of thing.
Right, and that helps.
Where do you draw the line between about confidentiality?
Well, I would say to not, I mean, you can always use a team, and a coach's name is okay, and to say the team, which team you're working with is fine. If you're doing individual work with one individual athlete, you wouldn't want to say their name unless you have permission after you work with one individual athlete, and if you get their permission to use a testimonial, you could, have a one- or two-line testimonial type thing, and as long as you have that, then that's very valuable to the team, as long as you do that. But you wouldn't want to talk about their whole case or individual specific things about them. So that's a good question. Yeah, confidentiality, you want to keep it confidential. But if you're working with teams and a coach, a name of a coach, then you often there's no problem with that.
Because I attended a workshop at this last conference and applied to psychology. They really emphasize the confidentiality issue in one of the workshops. That not only includes the name of a player, of course, but also even the name of a team. The the speaker was saying he would not even wear a shirt related to any team that he's working with because he doesn't want to give any lead, any information, anything, any impression to any people outside the client's office that he has any relation whatsoever with the team that he's working with.
It's interesting. Yeah.
So it's not so much about not only the individual, but also even the team.
Yeah, it's interesting that. Was that at the AASD workshop?
Yep.
Yeah, I think they tend to be very focused on ethics and ethical issues.
Yeah.
And that. Sorry, go ahead. We can say something.
No, I mean that's a concern of mine. Yeah. I don't want them to be, have legal consequences because of a lack of not abiding by the confidentiality agreement.
Yeah, I agree totally. Yeah, and you should always ask permission and get permission in writing to use any name of a player or team first. And I think, sometimes it can be abused where an athlete or a sports psychologist would use a name without that permission, or they flaunt people's name or something, somebody that they're working with for their own benefit, and that's not good at all. So you have to be really, I think it is important to be very respectful of the athletes and respect their confidentiality. So, to use caution at first is really important, and to ask permission to use a name is important. And sometimes it depends on the political nature of the game too. If there's say two teams that are kind of rivals within an organization, and if you're working with one team but not the other, then that one team might get more upset. So it's important to be conscious, be aware of those kinds of things that are going on as well. I know for instance, in Mexico City, the two certification students and coaches we have there were talking about they're working at the Central American Games with the team, the whole team together, and they were actually they were part of the paid to work as the mental training coaches for the for Mexico team in the Central American Games. And they had six team members, and all of them were, as I mentioned before, there were problems with a team dynamics because they were ex-wives and ex-husbands and had lots of past history together. And so when they went down there, there were two factions, and one group wanted to sit at one table and one would have lunch separately. They'd always have like two separate groups, and they wouldn't eat together, wouldn't do things together because of their sort of past history. But they would ask the mental training coaches to eat with them and say, "Oh, can you have lunch with us?" And they would be very careful to say, "No, we have to prepare. We're working on programs," and they wouldn't not socialize with them afterward or before because of because they might be seen as being one-sided. Or choosing one section, one group over the other. So it's really important to try to be objective and be, if you're working with a whole team, to just be fair and only, just do your workshop and then, but not hang out or not socialize too much with the athletes themselves, because they may see you as favoring certain players, that kind of thing. So that's sort of one thing that's related to it, to really be professional and only do your work as a mental coach or performing edge coach, and not not do a lot of you know, socializing, not going out to dinner with one particular athlete or that type of thing. So that I just wanted to bring that in as one example. But I think, yeah, Alex, it's good that you bring up the confidentiality issue because you do want to be really careful with the names and the players, and not to use any names without their permission in writing. And I think if you are working with a team, a lot of teams have sports psychologists. I mean, like, I know Nike has a sports psychologist, the team Nike in Oregon, and they have his name, I think, listed on their website, so it's very out in the open, and the athletes talk about that they all go to this one sports psychologist there, and there's no issue with that. And Nike is, of course, very well known and all, and so in that case, I think it's it's fine because he's working with the whole team. He works with individuals too, but doesn't say their names openly without their permission. But it's widely known that he is the one sports psychologist for the team, and I think that is fine. That's fine. That you don't need to hide that. So it's a fine line, and it's not an either or situation. It's not. It depends on the circumstances that you're in and how you use your name. But the key is to be very professional about it, and to not use anyone's name without permission. Yeah, is that helpful?
I think so. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't cover the whole topic, but maybe we should, kind of do a future talk on this topic of ethics and confidentiality. That would be good to do just one call on that, because I agree with you. You don't want to get in trouble, that's for sure, and you want to be professional about it. And yet you also want to be able to promote yourself and to market yourself, so it's like we're a balancing act here, and I think you'll see that sports psychologists and mental coaches are all over the map with that, some, like, certain organizations are very protective and say don't use anybody's name anywhere, anytime, and then you've got other people, like Nike, that's openly says who their sports psychologist is, and he does and he talks about that. So it depends on the culture of and the group that you're working with, and so it's really important to kind of be aware of the culture, and to always exercise caution, always be on the conservative side, and. Especially with the media, too. I guess it's really, we should do a whole workshop on that, too, kind of how to handle the media if they ask you. Often the first thing that media will ask me if they're doing a story, a newspaper or a magazine or someone, they'll ask, what are the names of the athletes you're working with? And I always say that that's confidential information. I can't give that out. Unless an athlete's given permission for that, but you always want to be. Even if they have given permission, you want to be really careful because you don't want to be seen as just using their name for your own benefit, kind of thing. It's better to just talk about athletes in general. Here's a case where I did this, and not use the specifics. You know? Yeah.
Joanne, did you happen to see an article that was in the Wall Street Journal a couple weeks ago, and it was about emotional wellness for college athletes, and it was based around a football player at Ohio State that committed suicide, and the whole article was talking about how there really needs to be more focus and more attention on emotional wellness of athletes because they're really under the microscope And there's a lot of other issues that are going on aside from just, you know, sports psychology things, you know, like concentration, distraction control, things like that. And that the person really needs to be treated more as an entity, as a person, not so much the sports side. And I think that's really interesting. And I even sent the article to a couple of these college coaches because I think that's something that they need to be concerned about is more of the emotional wellness and the state, the psychological state of how these kids are doing.
Yeah, that's a great point, right.
Do you think you can forward that article to me?
Sure. I'm actually trying to find it right now, but I just stumbled on another interesting one, and it's First-Time Study Examines Lifetime Health of College Students. And this is part of the USC News. I just started Googling well-being of college athletes.
Yeah,
and that's something that I have an idea where it could be an interesting topic for college coaches, aside from just, you know, how do you make your team play better? How do you make this individual function the best that they can under the pressures that they have, especially the Ivy League schools, these really tough schools? The kids are under so much pressure. And I'm just sort of toying with this thought in my head, but when I read that article, I thought it was really interesting and something that could be really beneficial to teams.
Yeah, that is great. So, or if you email me the article here, then I could just send out an email to everyone with the link there. And
okay.
And put it on our Performing Edge Coach website, too. Yeah, that'd be great. We don't have to do it right now, but
Yeah, I can send that to you.
Yeah, okay.
But do you think that's an interesting area?
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. I'm so glad you brought that up, Amy, because that's, like you say, emotional wellness. So many coaches are only concerned about winning because their salaries are based on that. And so the coaches of the top schools, of course, are also, you know, really focused on performance and winning and do anything to win at all costs attitude. But that oftentimes it's at the expense of the athletes. And they're just, you know, focused on how can we perform our best here out on the field. But, there's, of course, with football, there's all this information now coming out about the traumatic brain injury because of head concussion and so much trauma to the head, and that can cause then emotional injury and addiction to pain medication and all kinds of things. So there's that going on within the impact sports, and then you've got also just the the emotional side of that, the pressure that to perform, and oftentimes athletes get injured in the mid-season when they're right going up to playoffs when it's really a key time to do well, and so they feel like as soon as they get injured, their whole identity is thrown out the window because they can't do what they're supposed to be doing, and especially if they're on a huge scholarship, you know, oftentimes like Stanford could be, you know, $250,000 or $500,000 for, you know, the 4 years, and they're on a 4-year full-time scholarship and then they're injured, they can't perform, and their identity is at stake, their scholarship might be taken away or reduced. And so there's, it could easily, you know, lead to a, you know, suicidal thoughts or a suicidal situation because everything is being taken away from them. Their social life, instead of being looked up to as a top player, you know, all of a sudden they're not getting if it's a guy, they're not getting the girlfriends that they had before, they're not getting the honors that they have hope for. So, and all that is kind of is being is a result of all the pressure that to perform, and oftentimes coaches don't allow the athletes the proper time to rest and recover. They just, you know, if they get a little bit injured or strained, a strained muscle or something, they just sent the physical therapy right there to tape them up and or put, you know, pain relieving drugs in them quickly and, you know, even right in the middle of the game, go back out to the field and play. We've got to have you for this game, even though it's not the best in their best interest or not the best for their themselves. So that type of thing is going on a lot where athletes don't have the coach doesn't have the athlete's best interests at mind. And that's where the kind of thing where I think, you know, we as mental training coaches, performance coaches, performing edge coaches can do a lot, so much work because these athletes just have, you know, they come in, they can come into your office with just like a year, you know, just feeling almost like emotional abuse or that they're being used by the system and have no one to talk to about that because coaches oftentimes don't want to, don't have the time or don't have the skills to you know, to provide counseling or provide some kind of support for them. And so they only want to deal with the stars on the team that are performing well. Oftentimes if an athlete isn't doing performing as well, either mentally or physically, then they just don't know how to deal with that. And so they just go on and focus on the athletes that are doing well, and the other ones get left behind. And that's when there's can be a real issue there. So, and that's the kind of thing that we can really help with. Oftentimes an athlete just needs someone to, you know, like you as a mental training coach to talk to and to get out their frustrations, to realize that they, you know, kind of make a list of things that they can control, things they can't control. They might not be able to control their coach or the team that they're on or the weather, what their season that's coming up with the list of schedule of events. But what they can control is their, you know, how they respond to it and have time to, you know, to cry if they need to and to talk about their frustrations and to heal and realize that they are not the only ones there, that they're not the only one that's feeling that way. And oftentimes it can really help. I just want to give an example of that is with an athlete, and this is, we're talking about sort of mental meltdowns here with, you know, our topic, and one of the athletes that I just am working with right now is a 17-year-old high school kid, and he's in a cross-country meet, and he was in San Francisco, always on the top of his team, and the best in the country, and I mean, and the best in his not country, but in San Francisco area, and then in cross country, and so he was kind of like a big fish in a small pond, and the coach always relied on him to do the best on the team, and he really was sort of made the team the last few years, and then so he does well as long as he's doing he's competing within the league of that area, but because he's the best in that particular area. But then what happens when he would go to a bigger meet, the NCS meets, which is the whole Northern Coast section, then he's no longer at the top. He's like he's a much bigger, he's a small fish in a big pond, and he would end up, was in one race at the NCS meet, and he had he wasn't right wearing the proper shoes. First, it was muddy, and so he couldn't get a grip on the proper grip on the dirt, and he couldn't really respond when the other athletes were going by, and it was really demoralizing. But it was really an equipment problem. But that's an equipment problem sort of started an emotional problem, and teammates would come up behind him, teammates that he he could always beat before. Now all of a sudden they're going by him, and so he was thinking it was himself, but it was actually realized later that it was his shoes, that he didn't have the proper shoes on to be able to manage in that type of weather, and so that created a lot of anxiety. Whenever the races get bigger, he'd start doubting himself, and he says, "I know these guys, I can beat these guys, and I know their pace, and I just need to stick with them." But then, he'd see 30 guys go by him all of a sudden, and start to doubt himself and say, they're all really looking good, and he'd start freaking out and saying, "I'm as strong as these guys, but he wouldn't be able to respond well to them in that race." So that set up, oftentimes one event like that can set up a situation where everybody is, where he doubts himself for the next race. And so what happened then at the state meet after that, he tried to recover mentally and said, "Okay, I'm ready. Nothing's going to faze me. I've got a plan. I'm not going to go out too fast." But then he ended up the first mile, his goal was to go out at like 5:10, 5 minutes, 10 seconds per mile. But he was, because there were a lot faster guys in this race, and it was a lot more competitive than he's used to, he got strung along and ended up going out too fast at 4:58 for the first mile. So it was much faster than he had planned. And so he got more tired, went into more oxygen debt, and his goal was to get in the top 20 of the race. And this is a real example of having a mental meltdown. I think he described it to me. But if you can have the athlete describe to you all the details of what's going on and really kind of pour their heart out to you, I think that really helps. He said, before at mile one, he was expecting to be in top 20. But they call out the places, and they said I was in 40th place, and his legs felt tired, so he was like way back from where he had planned. So the feedback he was getting and the results were not matching his expectations at all, and it was a huge difference between what he'd thought he could do and then what he was actually doing there. And that part of that was just making the mistake of going out too fast in the race that first mile, which set up a kind of a failure situation for the whole race. So he got pulled along, and he realized that that he'd gone out too fast. He was really going a faster pace, but that he was in 40th place. And so that's really demoralizing. And now the two guys that he'd beaten in other races are running ahead of him. And the two guys on his team that he usually beats are passing him. So he's getting more negative feedback or feedback that I'm not good enough here. And then before this, at the second mile marker, they said, "You're in 62nd place." So he's really slipping back, and he said he was starting to have a panic attack, really, which brings on that mental meltdown that we're talking about. And he said, "Thoughts overloaded my mind. I had trouble breathing. My mind was overloaded. There was so much stress. Everyone in the race was passing me. And then finally he just kept slipping back, and he just kind of gave up mentally in the race." And he said the last guy in the race passed me, and he said, "Now I'm in last place, which is 180th so he went from being top 20 at the beginning to 40th, and now he's 180th and he said, I came here to get 20th place, but it was the first mile was too fast, and then when the second two teammates passed him, and then these two guys from another college that he's competitive with, they passed him, and then finally when the sixth guy, they need five guys on the team to score, and when the sixth guy passed him on from his own team, meaning he was no longer, he wouldn't count as the team at all. It would be the other guys that would count in terms of their points, the top five guys. He says, I freaked out, and he just decided to drop out of the race. And so I heard that story, and, you know, I was writing down all of that because it was really important to kind of understand what was going on. And now that I'm telling you that, as you're listening, I'm just wondering what you would tell, you know, just as an exercise here before I say what happened. If he was in your office, what would you tell him? Afterward, as he's kind of trying to, it's the end of, you know, the race is over, and gets kind of the end of the season. He's trying to reevaluate now for being able to make a comeback into the track season, and kind of put that all that into perspective. Now, just you guys, Alex and Amy, maybe do you have a perspective on that? Kind of what your thoughts are hearing that?
I think what I would do is I would really focus on goal setting.
Yeah.
And vision of what he thinks he wants it to look like, and what he wants to really put his energy into in the upcoming season, and just kind of let go what happened, but really emphasize and be strict with the goal, you know, very short-term goals, and make them very specific and kind of work on that.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, to be able to think about the next goals coming up. Yeah, that's good. Anything else, you guys?
What crosses my mind is to understand the issue of expectations.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to know if having an expectation before the race, how was that experienced for him? Because sometimes in my experience, usually when athletes have an expectation of wanting to finish either first, second, or 20th, they already have this tightness in their muscles.
Uh-huh.
Which is very close, linked together to the negative spiral thoughts when the expectations are not being met. So I'd be curious to know more about how he's mentally prepared about, and whether the word expectations crosses his mind. Because it's not really, it's not much he can do about reaching a goal. What he can do is do the best he can to perform the best he can to achieve his best. Whether that be number one or number 20th or 74th, it doesn't really matter. I think what really matters is the process that he needs to stick with in order to achieve his best. And I think that if he's tying his performance to an expectation, want to achieve result X, that may have a negative consequence in the mental and also physiological and physical readiness to do his best.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, Amy and Alex, I think that's really that's a great way to think about it. You can't do much if you've got a certain sort of physical preparation for that day, and then you can't really you can't all of a sudden make yourself into a you know, much faster runner on that day. But what you can do is as you say, perform the best you can on that day, get the best performance out of your body. Using your mind, and so there's a lot you can do mentally. You can't train physically to perform much better on that day, but you can make a huge difference mentally, and you can try to next time prevent those mental breakdowns or mental meltdowns. And, yeah, you can set, like you say, expectations are huge. And so we talked about that in our last session, too, that maybe sometimes it's good to be flexible in your goals and your expectations and not necessarily and have a plan A and then have a plan B if that doesn't work and a plan C and think of different scenarios that could happen. So that, for instance, he was talking about sometimes with races he'll have a certain time goal, and other races he'll have a certain place goal. And in this case, he wanted a place goal of, say, getting in the top 20, but, he wasn't taking into consideration the fact that there's a huge difference in the pool of guys, that it was a much more competitive group. And so maybe that wasn't a realistic goal there. And maybe it's good not to have a place goal at all, because that depends on how the other runners are doing, right? Which we don't have control over. Maybe it's better just to have and a time goal is a little bit more, you have a little bit more control over, because you're that doesn't depend on other people as much, although it does in the sense that you need the right people to pace with when you're running. And if you get in with the wrong group, like he did, that led him along too fast, so that then he went into oxygen debt and had a sort of a panic attack. It can then really mess up your time, because you can't you can't breathe properly to be able to get the good performance out of your body. Sometimes it's good to, like you say, Alex, just have a goal to perform the best you can on that day, to have sort of process goals rather than, results goals. Mm-hmm. Just think, my goal is to mentally focus, stay in the game, use my magnet technique, use the other runners, get good sleep the night before and eat well, and really stay relaxed and all of that, and then just let the results take care of themselves, right? So that's really important to have those process goals, I think, be out there. And that way, no matter if you do those things, that's what we have more control over. And then no matter what happens in the race, even if whatever place you get, then athletes tend to not be disappointed or not be as disappointed, because they haven't set a certain goal for time or place, but just the goal to do the best you can on that day, to focus. One thing I told him right away, I think if in that situation, the first time you're hearing the story, like talking with him, I said to him, because I'm an athlete too, and if you can relate to your client as an athlete as well as their performance coach, I think that really helps. Because I could feel what was going on with him, and I've experienced that myself. You know, Amy, you're a tennis player, and if you are talking to another tennis player, and you've been through the same kind of thing they have, like maybe where they double faulted or something. You know, if you can tell a story about how you double faulted in a tennis match, you know. Are you there, Amy?
Yep.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's helpful.
Yeah, to kind of tell your own story of how you messed up too, or how bad you felt, and that kind of thing. I think that really helps that they can relate, that they're not, that you can feel their pain, you know. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, they can relate to that.
Yeah, and they're not the only person that's going through this. Oftentimes, they think that it's that this is the worst thing that's ever happened, and that they are really messed up, and nobody else can understand. So, and Alex, what's your sports, Alex, that you've been involved with?
Growing up, golf.
Yeah, growing up?
Yep.
Which one?
Golf.
Yeah, golf. Yeah, of course. And you can talk about, how you, if you've had a real breakdown, you probably had a time when it just wasn't going right for you at all. And you can talk about that, or, something that relates to, say, a golf client, how just, know, 1 minute you're on and 1 minute you're off and that kind of thing. So if you can relate those stories, it makes a huge difference. And or even if you're not in the same sport as the athlete that you're talking to, you can still tell your own story of your sports experience and just talk about the same, having the same feelings and the same sort of mental breakdown. It really helps to know the athlete to know that you've gone through that, and maybe talk about any tips or strategies you use to get through that. And I told him, this athlete, I'm referring to the cross-country runner, I mean, I've had a races where I was, you know, had an expectation to do really well, and then it didn't go well at all. And he, you know, dropped out of that race. And I said, you know, hearing what you just said and, you know, with all that happened, I want to tell you, if I was there, I would have done the same thing. I would have done exactly the same thing. I would have dropped out just like you. And he said, wow, that really, he had like a physical change on his face and his body, like, wow, you really understand. And he says, oh, wow. And there was an immediate connection when I said that. I mean, most people, like a, let's say, a, if he had gone to a regular psychologist that's overweight and out of shape and has never done a race, and they said, oh, you should never drop out of a race or something, you know, that would not resonate with him at all, but because I've been there and I could feel how awful he felt, and I would think, yeah, it's much, I would have dropped rather than be last place in a race and have that on the results. And he was basically had mentally and physically dropped out of the race anyway. I would rather just drop out, and so it sometimes in some situations it's okay to drop out of a race. And I said that yeah, I would have done exactly the same thing as you. And it all of a sudden at that moment he felt like, wow, you totally understand me, and you relate to me, and we're both, you know, you're down here in the dumps just like I am, or you've been there in the dumps, and it's okay, we can rise. You know, he's feeling like, yeah, you can. If you're sometimes you have to go down in the dumps mentally with a client, be there where they are, not stay there, but just show them that you've been there, you understand, and you're at that moment you're totally understanding where they're at. And actually going, as he was telling me that journey through the race, I could feel it, and I felt like I was there, right there with him. Then he could relate to me, and then he was totally open at that point to being able to talk about the future and how, and I said, well, what'd you do after that? And he said, oh, I went over to, just sat under a tree for about a half an hour, and then I just came back and just said a quick goodbye to the team, and then I left. And and his coach, I said, did your coach tell you anything? And he said, yeah. He said, the coach said, you've done so much for this team. You know, it doesn't matter about today. Just let it go. He said, you've really made the team what it is for the last 3 years. And so he remembered that. And so that was a good coach that he had that really told him how much he's done for the team and valued, you know, not just looking at that one day. That one day does not reflect who he is as an athlete. And that's what the coach was telling him, and that's what I was telling him. But let's look at, you know, the last 3 years, he's really made the team what it is. He's brought the team up, their individual team there. And so the coach was really valuing him as a player, as an athlete, and like Amy, like you say, as a person, you know, to talk about how much, how valuable he is as a whole person. So he could look at the big picture the last 3 years, not just that one day. I think that's really important to look at that. If an athlete has achieved a lot, you know, look at their whole history so that they can see that this is just one day. It's one small thing that happened. And if you can say to them, you know, this is, it's important to approach that loss from a different angle and say, you know, losses in your races or games, it can be an opportunity to find out something that is difficult to learn under any other circumstances. And you know, like with him, with this athlete, I could, you could say to yourself, and I told him that myself, I've been there myself, I could say I really screwed up all this time, all those hours of training have been wasted, I let my friends down, my coach down, my family down, my team down, you know, or you could approach it from, I mean, that there's those feelings there, it's good to acknowledge them, I think, and just say, yeah, that's there. And then just begin to move into a different direction and say you can also approach this. What if you were to have a more forgiving attitude and say, you know, I said to myself, when I was in a race like that, I said, okay, all right, I've came up short on my goal. You know, I didn't have my time goal or my place goal. But it doesn't mean I'm a worthless person. Just like Amy, like you were talking about, let's look at the whole person. Your identity. You can say to yourself, I'm disappointed, but this is not a life or death situation. I chose to do this race. Nobody is forcing me to do it, and I can. It's my choice, and it was just a one-day thing, and this has nothing to do with my value as a human being. You know, it was just one day, one race. It has to do with, you know, performing a specific skill under particular conditions on this particular day. And then just kind of looking at it from a bigger perspective, you know, you can say to yourself, you know, 10 years from now, this one experience will probably, you know, be really insignificant. It's just one event in my whole life. And then, like you both are saying, you know, focus on goals. And you can ask yourself, you know, then start to, so first kind of evaluate what the person's feelings are and acknowledge them and try to, if you can, join with them in terms of your feelings and what that was like to feel really down in the dumps and not do well. And I think it's okay to just be there for a while to just realize the feelings that we're all humans and we all have feelings. Sometimes there, you know, we have a whole range of feelings. We have happiness and excitement, but, you know, the happiness and excitement part, you can't really appreciate that unless you've been really down other times. And so we need to appreciate that whole range of emotions. And you can ask yourself then. Oh, go ahead.
Joanne, do you think that maybe the preseason workshop that I'm going to do should touch on the athlete more as a person and the emotional wellness? Since we've been on this call, I did email you the article. And
oh, great.
Thank you. It's called The Mental Health of the College Athlete.
Oh, there it is. Okay, great. Thank you. Perfect. Okay, so
Do you think that, so my question to you that I sent, I don't know, I resent that again, was with these three workshops that I have the opportunity to do to kind of get ideas of what your perspective is, you know, you only have three workshops. What are the three really important things that you would think about doing with a team if you had them before they start, in the middle, and then right before the playoffs? Do you think the emotional part is something that would be valuable as one of the first ones?
Yeah, I think so, because it's kind of like sets a foundation for them. And like Alex, you were saying, expectations are so important. So many athletes set an expectation that we're going to win. You know, the team's going to win the league championship or the state championship or national championship, and that's only one, you know, it sets up so much pressure. If you can have more of a foundation of, emotional health, you know, you could have like a little rating kind of thing for them, rate their emotional health, in terms of 1 to 10 right now, of course, and make it, you know, have everybody do that privately, because people aren't going to necessarily want to share their ratings for that. And that could be, that term happiness is really a big thing now. Everybody's talking about how to increase your happiness. And if you go to those TED Talks, those are fantastic, too. They had a series on those, you know, TED Radio. You go to TED.com and listen to their TED Talks on happiness. Those are really some good places to get good information, maybe for doing your work, for us to work with athletes in general, and, yeah, Amy, for your workshop. So kind of your happiness rating. You know, talk about, yeah, the sort of the what are the components of emotional health would be really good, I think. You know, just and you know, one of those things is sort of communication, right? Being able to talk about the how to be able to communicate with other players, with the team, with your coach, within yourself, and how to be a good, good overall player. How to handle sort of the emotional ups and downs, right? What were you thinking in terms of emotional health, Amy? What topics within that?
I like the thing about. Where's my dog? I like the thing about the happiness, the science of happiness, mm-hmm. and also resilience. Building resilience.
Yeah.
I do like the thing that you said about, you know, maybe do a rating for them as far as, you know, what do you think, what level do you think you are on right now as far as your emotional health and well-being?
Yeah.
But I think that could be an interesting start, and maybe have them do a values assessment. Remember
yeah.
that sheet you have that you gave us with what their values are, to circle the values?
Yeah, values, and then you talk about the different values in life, their balance in life, how you rate yourself in terms of your emotions, your personal health, your financial health, your social health, all those things, your physical well-being, and all those things, because it's good to have a balance between all those, and most of us are unbalanced in some way. And how much time, you know, ask them, how much time do you spend each day with each of those areas of your life? Like, we tend to be unbalanced most of the time. If it's an athlete, they're spending maybe too much time on the physical fitness. If you're talking to a business client or something, it's probably the opposite. They're not spending enough time on their physical fitness. But athletes spend too much time on the fitness part, but not enough time on their kind of emotional well-being. So maybe they could spend more time journaling about their feelings. Journaling is a great way to, I think at nighttime, to talk about, you know, giving them some questions to ask, like, how did I feel about my practice today, how do I feel about myself, how can I, give them some power words to use, to say to themselves before they go to sleep at night, affirmations, so that they're, because right before sleep is a really important time to give yourself positive input, I think, so that we go to sleep thinking about subconscious mind is in a happy place. Go to your happy place, so to speak, that people talk
mm-hmm.
about. So all that. And then I was thinking of the Your Performing Edge book. In my book there, chapter 3 is all about a desire, which is a component of the emotional part too, the profile of a high motivated athlete or highly balanced athlete. And you could talk about those different qualities. There's 7 qualities there, the enthusiasm and desire and the courage to succeed. Courage is one good aspect of emotional health, and, you know, having that internal motivation and direction and commitment to excellence. There's a sense of discipline, you know, self-discipline and organization is important, and how to be focused and yet relaxed. And then ability to handle adversity, that brings up a lot of the emotional health stuff. Ability to, what happens when things aren't going right, going so well. You know, kind of preparing athletes for that. And maybe the emotional part, I was thinking it could be emotional health. If you're doing three workshops, it could be actually a section of each of the workshops, you know, emotional health part one, emotional health part two, and part three for each of the workshops. They have a component of that in each one. For the mid-season, I'd say, you know, kind of work on evaluating where are we at. Yeah, emotionally, physically, as a team, as individuals, and you know, talking about the sort of building strength, you know, for what's coming up. Talk about what's you know, just your focus. You know, where are you at with self-discipline. I don't know, did you have ideas what you were thinking of for the mid-season one?
Not yet. This really all came about yesterday.
Yeah, but I think it's a really good topic for, you know, Alex, too, for, you know, you could present that to different coaches, too. Anyone here could present that. Yeah, the three workshop idea is really good, I think, because oftentimes, athletes or coaches only think in terms of you know, one shot thing or a one time talk, and it's if you can think of it, three throughout the season, then you're there. You're sort of coming in at really critical points during their season, and you can be of help. Depending on what's going on during the season. Like in playoffs, that last one, the workshop, you'd probably want to talk about, you know, the topics in section four of my book is all about that sort of the race and the playoff time, you know, peak performance. So that fourth section of the book is like understanding performance anxiety, because, you know, pressure builds up at that time of the year, and then dealing with pain and negative energy, how to get through the tough parts of the race or the game. You could talk about, you know, embracing the challenge, how to perform on that, putting it all together on race day or game day, and then the lessons in excellence, losing and learning, like we're talking about here, how to deal with those mental meltdowns. And lessons that you can learn from that, and then preventing performance slumps and injuries and burnout. So those could be topics for the last one. Actually, the, you know, for the first one, first workshop, you know, you could talk about the essential tools of the trade. That's section two of the Your Performing Edge book. There's some of the topics in there. You know, the three P's that we talk about. Positive images, visualization techniques, and then the power words, you know, what we say to ourselves, and then the present focus, goals. You know, that section three of the book there, you might pick out some topics from there for the mid-season stuff, like building your confidence and self-image and, you know, improving your concentration, your focus, and belief in yourself.
You said section three, you said?
Yeah, section three of the book, yeah,
okay.
Is on kind of your performing edge mindset. Yeah, the first workshop could be kind of the basic skills of the three P's, and the second one could be on, you know, self-confidence, focus, and belief in yourself, managing your inner critic, because in the mid-season, oftentimes, things aren't, depending on how the team's doing, some athletes might think, oh, I'm not good enough, I'm not strong enough, I'm not fast enough, so they have to sort of manage that inner critic part of them that's putting them down, or maybe the coach is putting them down, and they need to be able to build themselves up themselves. And then yeah, there's meditation training, there's training the stillness in the mind, and so all those topics could be ones for, you know, maybe that second area, so the second workshop, and then, listening, And then any athletes that might be injured, you know, maybe that would be in the midseason might be a good time to talk about injuries and healing those mental and physical wounds and managing emotional difficult emotions. Is that section 5 of the book there? So that could be in the kind of the middle too. You might not want to talk about injuries during the playoffs because they want to talk more about sort of section 4 of the book there on you know performance anxiety. But yeah, does that give you some ideas, Amy? And
yeah, I like the idea of having a component in each workshop.
Yeah.
To deal with a certain topic, and then the next workshop deal with that, you know, just sort of add on to that theme and have a couple different topics for each one.
Yeah. And always assess, you know, kind of assess where the team is at kind of thing, you know, to make it customized for where they're at during that time, whether the team mid-season evaluate if they're on a winning streak, on a losing streak, in between. Setting reasonable goals, all that. So, yeah, that would be great. And I think that's a great topic to bring up. And it's, you know, the mental meltdown kind of thing you could talk about in terms of the mid-season if people are having a tough time with that. And sometimes if the athlete is... if you're working with a team, and then you might get individual clients from that. Ask, you know, always talk about your services as a coach, and that you can work with individual athletes on your own and there. And you might get athletes ask them, you know, and talk with their parents as well if they're in high school or college, because the parents are usually the ones paying the bill, and so they want to be involved in. Always want their child to do the best in their season, and so sports parents are usually really supportive of this kind of thing, and sometimes that's good too if you can involve parents in a workshop or have a workshop just for parents, sports parents, then that really gets them interested in doing what you want and working with you. So,
is there anything in your book that you would use for parents?
Yeah, I think that's a good topic. I think a good question, Amy. I would say the chapter 25, Putting Performance in Perspective, Positive Coaching, is for, that chapter is for both coaches and parents. So it's on page 237, and, you know, just talking about common coaching, it says common coaching mistakes, but it's also common parenting mistakes. So you could talk about those, like, you know, overreacting when an athlete makes an error. You know, a lot of parents put so many expectations on their kids, or high standards, and they're perfectionists, that they get really upset. So when the athlete doesn't perform perfectly all the time, they're oftentimes trying to live through their kids because they were an athlete themselves maybe but never achieved what they wanted. So they're hoping, expecting, and their athlete to kind of come through for them, and oftentimes it doesn't happen exactly the way they wanted. So talking about their... Apparent.
Chapter 25, you said?
What's that?
Chapter what number?
Oh, it's chapter 25.
25.
Yeah, that's Putting Performance in Perspective.
Okay.
Yeah, page 237. So, yeah, you could talk about all those common... It's for coaches and parents, so whenever it says coaches there, you can also substitute parents... use that as well, because both have the same kinds of issues. I think sometimes, oftentimes parents demand too much time or commitment from athletes, so they're overtrained. So, you know, talking about that with parents too, you know, how to give your kid a sense of balance, and you know, keeping and then oftentimes the mistake is keeping the pressure on so that they're really expecting the athlete to do fantastic in every performance, and doesn't always work that way, and not respecting that the athlete needs balance. So talking about those kind of the problems and mistakes, I think that can really get their attention, because people will come to a workshop or a talk, or they'll pay for services to fix problems as opposed to just getting more information. I mean, they want that too, but the thing that they're most motivated to do is to, you know, that you provide a solution to a specific problem. So sometimes with female athletes, you know, the parents overemphasize body weight, so you want to, there could be self-image problems there. Even with guys or women, there's self-image is a huge thing, and, you know, how they look is so important. And so that's another topic. You know, losing perspective on the purpose of sports. Sometimes they get so, parents are so focused on just like coaches focus on winning and getting points and getting and expecting the athlete to be perfect in all areas and have great grades and a great performance, and they're putting the athletes under additional stress with that, being preoccupied with winning. And like you were saying, Amy, at the beginning, if we can switch the focus to sort of the overall person and the emotional health is so important. So emphasizing that with parents too, and having them work on their own emotional health. You know, parents are often a model for their kids, so if they can work on their own emotions and emotional health, then they can they're going to be a lot better in translating that to their kids too. If a parent comes to a game and is rolling their eyes or looking away or looking with disapproval, the kids notice that. I've had kids oftentimes complain about their parents. They just notice those little little things, just rolling their eyes when the kid does it makes a mistake. You can talk to parents about that kind of thing, how to be more supportive, and how to be a spectator without getting and keep their emotions in check. And parents can do journaling too. I think that's a good thing. You know, journal about their own emotions so that they handle their own emotions themselves without placing these overly high standards and expectations on their kids. So does that kind of help with your question, Amy?
Yes, very much. There's a lot of information.
Yeah, great. So we're about out of...
Just for references, looking for ways to help parents. This is a nice book called 101 Ways to Be a Terrific Sports Parent. That has also good ideas.
So, oh, yeah. Do you know who the author is?
Joel Fish.
Oh, really? He's the big sports psychologist in Philadelphia.
That's right. Yeah, he is.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you for that reference. Alex, that's great.
That's a good idea. Okay.
Yeah, any kind of books like that are really useful. So, because that's, I think, a way to get, oftentimes with kids, with high school and college kids, with teens, it's the parents that are the ones, well, they're the ones that pay the bills. And so they're the ones most concerned about their kids' well-being, and so they're sort of can be a really good client for you to get on board with them, so that they can hire you to be their coach, So if you can write, say, for instance, on your website, you know, write articles about being a good sports parent, or problem, you know, mistakes that sports parents make, that kind of thing, and you know, talk about that, then parents will be more attracted to you to want to work with you to help their child. And this time of year, I'm finding it's really good too, because it's interesting. You can get a lot of the kids that are coming home from college, or they're to your area, or they are getting out of school right now, and they're off for the holidays, and parents think it's a good time for kids to get some additional help when they have more time here in between before they start the new season. So this is a good time to you know, maybe write articles, or go to the school and find out how, if there's a parent organization maybe you can talk for, you know, get in touch with them, and ask parent, you know, ask the coaches, you know, how do they stay in touch with parents, kind of thing. So yeah, great. This is a really good discussion with you guys. I appreciate it. And we'll start, next meeting will be December 30th, so 2 weeks from today, so not next week, but the week after. We'll just do it on the Tuesday, December 30th, since 2 days later is Thursday, would be the New Year's Day, and then we'll go back to our regular schedule after that. So, so I want to wish all of you a good holiday and everything. Was there any particular thing that, if you guys, what was most helpful for today, a good nugget that you could share so everyone remembers?
For me, just give me all those ideas about the workshops and having different topics in each one, sort of building on a theme and then going back to it for the next workshop.
Uh-huh.
I like that.
Okay.
Yes, I'm here. I like that idea to breaking down these workshops in the pre-season, mid-season, playoffs season, and provide different themes that can link one from another. That's great.
Yeah, great. Okay. Yeah. Good. Okay, well, I'm glad you have great questions. I love to, always love to answer your questions. Anything about mental... You know, using kind of hot words like that, like mental meltdown, mental breakdowns is a good thing to use as a subtopic or in for your workshops too, because they're kids relate to that, and parents and coaches relate to that. Oh, mental meltdown. Yeah, I know that. Sure, that's one thing we want to avoid. So they'll come to your workshop to find out how to avoid a mental meltdown. So handling pressure, all those kinds of things. So yeah, and feel free to use the topics in the book and your performing edge book to, you know, enhance your workshops too, because they're as well as other resources, like you say. Thanks for your resource book, Alex, that you mentioned too. So great. All right. Well, good talking with all of you, and have a great holiday coming up, and then we'll just meet on December the 30th on that Tuesday, same time, 9 o'clock Pacific and 12 o'clock Eastern time. So that sounds great. All right, well, have a happy holiday.
Okay,
yeah, happy holiday
to you. Have a good holiday, everyone.
Yes, to you both.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye. All right, bye now.
Bye.